Real Money Radio is brought to you today by Holland Financial. Since 1997, David Holland and his team have helped hundreds of investors plan their financial futures. Planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Come see how simple and clear your future can be when you plan stronger. The consultation is free. Call 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have to confess, I have been anxiously looking forward to this next guest. He has been on the program before, so you know he's good because he gets invited back. His name is Leo Haviland, and he is a really smart guy on money and investing and risk and the markets. Leo, welcome back.
David, thanks very much for having me back on your show. It's an honor.
It's my pleasure. Website for more information and learn more about what Leo does, leohaviland.com. H-A-V-I-L-A-N-D, leohaviland.com, and the book, Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. And I invited Leo to come back on the program. He's written some really interesting articles lately. And with everything going on, the markets, debt, quantitative easing, the Fed, currencies, the global situation, I was very anxious to get him back on. So you can hear my enthusiasm. It's sincere. So if you don't mind, Leo, I just want to dive right in and start asking you some questions because I'm really interested in your insight.
Fire away.
All right, here we go. So first up is the Fed. The Fed recently dropped their bond buying from the $55 billion to $45 billion in the face of some less than robust economic growth in the first quarter. And I'm curious what you think about that. And you know, I know that our deficit has been coming, the current year's deficit has been coming down. But what do you make about that continued reduction in the Federal Reserve's bond buying, that additional $10 billion increment?
David, that's an excellent question. Though history need not repeat itself, when the Fed ceased quantitative easing one in 2010, the S&P 500 fell. Mm. When they seized quantitative easing in mid-2011, the S&P 500 dropped. So the tapering program in which they've been engaged in calendar 2014 would indicate that there's a substantial probability that the S&P 500 will likewise drop. Mm. You underline the deficit situation. Certainly, it seems as if for the next couple of years, judging from Congressional Budget Office estimates of deficits around 2.5% or so relative to GDP, that things look better. However, when one casts one's eyes out forward into several years past then, the deficit creeps up. Moreover, no one out there, Republicans or Democrats, are talking about surpluses. And finally, the long-run deficit issue remains a disaster, partly reflected by the fact that we've become a culture of debt and a culture of entitlements.
Yeah. Yeah, that's serious. That's very serious. And, you know, if you've got your car going 100 miles an hour and there is a wall,
yes.
And you are headlong Hiawatha headed into that wall, you know, at some point there's not going to be anything anybody can do to stop it. You know, I mean, you can turn, you can slow down, or you can turn the car around, or at least stop and slow down and do. But if you wait too long, there is no stopping it. There's nothing that anybody's going to be able to do to change that.
There seems to be a conspiracy of silence, almost, other than an occasional muttering by the Fed.
Yeah.
On the issue of that massive long-run deficit issue.
Well, you're right on, Leo, and I always like to pull up when I have conversations like this. I pull up my handy-dandy U.S. debt clock, which is on the internet at usdebtclock.org, and I'm sure you've looked at that. And right now, we're sitting at about $17.5 trillion. And then if I roll it forward, say to 4 years out to 2018, the debt is just under $20 trillion.
I'd like to have $2 or $3 trillion.
I would too. not to sound too much like a politician, but I think the American people would like it too. You know, I mean, we don't want that debt, and so there's some big undercurrents here, but I thought it was interesting that the Fed did drop it by $10 billion. The market didn't seem to react that much. And so my follow-up question to you, because I think you are right, there is going to be an impact at some point on the market. When do you think, and again, I know we're speculating a little bit, but if they knock it down $10 billion, which is a huge number to begin with, but they knock it down $10 billion a month, and it's at 45. When do you think it starts to have more of an impact? So if they knock it down another 10 or another 10, I mean, when does it become more of an impact? Because I didn't see much of an impact. Now, it might have been offset by some of the recent jobs numbers, but when do you think it's going to have more of an impact?
It probably will increase in impact if earnings show continued sluggish growth, not only in the first quarter, which it seems to be rather mediocre earnings on balance. You're more of an expert in that than I, David. And also, if that repeats itself in second quarter, the Fed won't meet for a little while now, and the Wall Street investment machine is doing its best to convince people that it's still a great opportunity to buy and get in there for some kind of long run. But on the other hand, one can say that the rate of stock market increase on the price side has definitely slowed.
Okay. Yeah, there's some lift or some lack of downgrading for the earnings. They haven't downgraded the impact there yet, and there's still some lift from some of the job numbers. Kind of an excuse for the first quarter because of, you know, hey, it was cold outside. You know, I'd like to be able to use that excuse for things that I don't end up doing the right way. You know, it's cold out. Give me a pass on that.
Right.
But we've done that. Opine on this, Leo, because I think this is an interesting analysis. If I look at the annual deficit right now we're running as a country, our government, $345 billion roughly for the current budget year. And if I multiply that $45 billion a month that we are creating, money we're creating by the Fed and then buying our own bonds with, it's $540 billion. My theory, and this is just purely conjecture on my part, but tell me what you think of it. When those two cross, in other words, when the taper gets to, say, from $45 billion down to $25 billion, that would be $300 billion a year. That was kind of the question I was after. I think we'll see an impact because then the money we're creating and buying with our own Federal Reserve, the debt, now has to be borne. Somebody else has to buy it in addition.
Good point. Certainly the foreign buyers.
Yeah.
From time to time have been substantial in their acquisitions, but many calendar months in 2013, they were net sellers.
Exactly.
And certainly with the yield repression that the Federal Reserve has blessed us with, for at least the first several years of the yield curve, unless there's some panic or flight to quality, the average American investor, not to mention most others, are not going to want to buy U.S. Treasuries.
Well, okay, and the reason will be because of the lack of yield, and so when somebody don't want to buy your stuff, you got to drop the price, right?
That's how it works on Main Street. But you have a good old monopoly.
So if you need somebody to buy your stuff, because right now they're the buyer and the seller, they're one, but once they have to start actually selling it in the quote unquote on Main Street, as you said, then the price has to go down, which means price of the bonds has to go down, meaning the interest rates have to go up. So the consumers or the buyers, some of these foreign buyers especially, Leo, they may demand a higher return. Instead of 2.5-3% yield, they may say, no, you know what, we want 3.5-4.
Right. Given the relative weakness of the U.S. dollar relative to its strength, whether back in 2002 or at the depths of the financial crisis in March 2009, when it was very strong, trade-weighted dollar. What happens to interest rates if the dollar weakens further from around its current feeble level?
Well, I know that's a little bit of a rhetorical question, but I'll answer it anyway. The rate's going to have to go up.
Yes.
Interesting. Leo Haviland, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest today. You see why I wanted Leo back on this program. His book is Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street, and his website is leohaviland.com. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Here's a newsflash. All financial advisors are not created equal. Some invest in their education by getting advanced degrees and professional certifications. Some don't. Some advisors get multiple licenses and offer a wide range of solutions. Some don't. Some advisors choose to be independent. Some don't. Some advisors disclose how they are paid and the fees they charge. Some don't. Please don't settle for a don't. Let me introduce you to independent advisor David Holland. David is a CPA, a certified financial planner, a personal financial specialist, and a chartered financial consultant. With 23 years financial experience, David offers a wide range of personalized solutions and discloses all fees in writing. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting.
And we are back with Leo Haviland, leohaviland.com, and the book is Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. And just to follow up our conversation there right before the break, Leo, I wanted to make mention of the fact that, and you've written about this, and that is you mentioned the dollar versus other currencies. We also have this ongoing, I guess, challenge, or I'm not sure how quite to phrase it. You've got a lot of rate repression overseas with, you know, the European Central Bank, Bank of England, Bank of Japan. They may change their posture at some point with their own interest rates. We could see an impact from that as well, couldn't we?
Excellent point, David. Yes. These nations, whether it's Japan or the ECB or Britain, they all want sufficient inflation, which seems to be around 2%.
Yes. And they're not getting it.
They're not getting it in Europe, definitely. Japan's had some signs of it finally in recent months. But the determination has been running into the relative headwind of still sluggish economic growth.
So it's a balancing act. They have to be careful. They want inflation, but they can't mess up the economic growth to get it.
They're saying a prayer that they get more economic growth.
Yeah. That's very well put. And China, there seems to be, you know, the view on China, every time I look at China and the information coming out of China, it just seems to be that there is this, almost like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy they're trying to create, that China's going to be able to sustain, as big as they've gotten and with some of the challenges that they've faced, that they're going to be able to sustain this glorious gold-plated 7-some% growth rate. And I'm not sure I believe it.
I share your disbelief, David. If one looks at the fine print and back paragraphs and statements by the Chinese leadership, they've indicated they will be flexible on that roughly 7.5% growth target. That's a warning sign. Another is the anecdotal evidence of excessive leverage or potential weakness in the property market, the indebtedness of the local governments, as well as the special financing vehicles that have arguably helped increase debt there at a greater rate than meets many eyes of even regulators on an international basis. Moreover, if things were going great there, why would the Chinese be engaged in these anti-corruption campaigns or be squabbling with Japan about some islands in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah. Well, that's very curious. And I read in one of your reports, and it referenced, I know this was in the Financial Times, I really find this remarkable. They had a bond auction, and they didn't sell all of it. Is that right?
Correct.
Wow. When and again, I know that we talked before about demand for the U.S. bonds, 10-year treasuries as a good example. I don't think I've seen one where we've had a problem selling them. And of course, that could change down the road. But I find it remarkable that they were not able to sell them all. Is that kind of a reflection of some of the concern?
It may be. Certainly, the central government there, on the whole, should be viewed on balance as creditworthy. But since the past couple of years, there's been a gradual creep up in interest rates, both short and long run, in the government marketplace there. Also, inflation may be worse in China than meets the eye.
Yeah.
And finally, there are these mysterious, over-the-counter interest rate deals offered, whereby persons allegedly can get marvelous returns, akin maybe to loan sharking in some other cultures, that could cause some Chinese bond buyers to want to put their money there, figuring that the government might backstop some of those enterprises.
I got you. Well, while we're talking about debt, this one is in I Can't Believe It department, Greece. I mean, they have they've left this kind of bond exile they were under, and they had a recent big issue. They were able to sell their bonds, which I just can't believe it.
If Greece were a member of my family, or if Greece were a member of your family, would you loan them additional money?
No, not without. I tell you what, I would loan Greece money, but I would have. Speaking of islands, at least their islands are in the middle of somewhere. I would say, well, I'll be happy to, but let's put a little lien on some of these islands that I'm going to own when you don't pay me.
Excellent point, David. That's very good. Also, with Greece and perhaps some other substantially indebted countries, the Eurozone, and I suppose a fair amount of the rest of the Western world, needs to dress Greece up so it no longer looks like a problem, or so that it looks like the regulators and politicians have the situation in control. That way it doesn't reflect on the rest of, say, the Eurozone family and other bad debtors. So if Greece looks okay, even if it really doesn't,
right,
and even if you have to put two or three overseers keeping a close eye on Greece, that helps tread water. And that's what the game seems to be over there.
Yeah, so we're not just putting lipstick on the pig. We're dressing it up in a full bridal gown and sunshade and everything else. It's not really a pig, Leo. I tell you, it's really amazing. And you know, the other thing that I really wanted to make sure we got to, unemployment rates, recent rate releases puts the unemployment rate at 6.3, and there were 288,000 jobs added. Your thoughts on that?
Well, on the face of it, it arguably sounds as if the Federal Reserve policies are working, and in this best of all possible world, that the economy is growing. And however, the labor force participation rates remain rather low, and aren't people actually leaving the workforce at a fairly decent rate, which tends to decrease the unemployment rate?
You're exactly right. I mean, we have, I don't know if it's historically the lowest, but it's got to be, you know, in the lowest category. It's definitely one of the lowest participation rates we've had, you know, in recent history.
Right. That makes the numbers look relatively optimistic. And if the stock marketplace isn't rallying on, you know, such a substantial decline in the headline number, one has to wonder how strong the economy is from the employment perspective.
That's a great point, Leo. There's just so much going on, and it's a little tricky to really unravel all of it. There's two more big topics I want to get to: the volatility and debt and margin that people are using with financing their stock purchases. But let's do this. Let's grab a quick break, and we'll come back, Leo. Leo Haviland is our guest today, leohaviland.com. The book is Words on the Street: Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. Be right back.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Then maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary. What's a fiduciary? That's a financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. Being a fiduciary also means that the advisor should recommend the products and services he believes will best serve his clients' needs, not what an insurance or investment company tells him he has to sell. So next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, "Are you a fiduciary?" The answer should only be yes or no. If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer is probably no. This public service announcement has been brought to you by Holland Financial. We want to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
Welcome back. Leo Haviland's there on the line with me, and the website is leohaviland.com, H-A-V-I-L-A-N-D.com, leohaviland.com, and the book, Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. Leo, I was really anxious to get back to you on a couple other topics. Volatility. If I pull up the VIX, which is, you know, a commonly used volatility index, and it's right around 13 or so, which would put it, you know, kind of in a trading range. A range between 11 and 23. It's kind of been the range for the last couple of years. So would you agree with my opinion that I think that volatility right now is relatively calm?
Excellent point, David. Yes.
Okay. And so, but if we start to see that go up again, it's an indicator, and I'm not even going to try to explain it on this program what it really means, but it's used as a volatility yardstick. It's if I understand, it's kind of a look at futures contracts, and then my head starts to hurt when I start trying to go beyond that. But it is a way of measuring volatility. So if we stay in that 11 to 23 range, we're quote unquote in a reasonable level. But if it starts to jump up over that, would that be maybe an indicator of a potential pullback or even a bear market?
That would be a very significant warning sign.
Okay.
Commencement of a bear market move in U.S. stocks.
You know, it's interesting, Leo. We are now entering the phase that I look at with bull markets. On one hand, everybody still remembers 2008, but on the other hand, everybody is saying, you know, as you said before, people getting in, people investing, and going into the market. It's almost like there's a disconnect. You know what I'm trying to say? So on one hand, we remember 2008, but it's this market's going up. Let's get in.
Excellent point. Well, in the wonderful, glorious Goldilocks era back then, like today, there was a hunt for yield, search for return, when there, of course, would be very little risk. Of course, the housing marketplace would have very little risk. It was a great opportunity, right?
Right, of course.
Now, compare today when there's the quest for yield or return, of course, assisted by the Fed and its central banking allies to repress interest rates, but along with that quest for yield, there, at least in recent months, has been a decline in credit standards, because the borrowers were able to insist on relatively lax terms. Moreover, as occurred very recently, the securities market margin debt at the New York Stock Exchange peaked in February at about $465 billion.
Wow.
And around the time of the peak of the S&P, that margin debt peaked.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, Leo, it's interesting, and we'll have to have you come back and talk more about it. But, you know, there was a quest for yield back before 2008, and we're back to searching for yield and kind of disregarding some of the risk issues. Ladies and gentlemen, Leo Haviland is our guest. That's the website and the book, Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. Leo, you're going to come back, I hope, and we'll do this again.
David, thanks very much for having me on your excellent show.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.